Rosie lay on the stairs with her eyes closed and her fists clenched above her head, listening to him scream. She tried not even to imagine what was going on out there, and she tried to remember that it was Norman who was screaming. Norman of the terrible pencil, Norman of the tennis racket, Norman of the teeth. Yet these things were overwhelmed by the horror of his screams, his agonized shrieks as Rose Madder, as she did whatever it was she was doing. After a while, a long, long while, the screaming stopped. Rosie lay where she was, fists unrolling slowly, but with her eyes still tightly shut, gasping in short, harsh snatches of air. She might have lain there for hours had not the sweet, mad voice of the woman summoned her. "Come forth, little Rosie, come forth and be of good cheer. The bull is no more." Slowly, on legs that felt numb and wooden, Rosie got first to her knees and then to her feet. She walked up the steps and stood on the ground. She didn't want to look, but her eyes seemed to have a life of their own. They crossed the clearing while her breath stopped in her throat. She let it out in a long, quiet sigh of relief. Rose Madder was still kneeling, still back too. Lying before her was a shadowy bundle of what at first looked like rags. Then a white starfish shape tumbled out of the shadow and into the moonlight. It was a hand, and Rosie saw the rest of him then, like a woman who suddenly sees sense and coherence in a psychiatrist's inkblot. It was Norman. He had been mutilated, and his eyes bulged from their sockets in a terminal expression of terror, but it was Norman, all right. Rose Madder reached up, as Rosie watched, and plucked a low-hanging fruit from the tree. She squeezed it in her hand, a very human hand and quite lovely, save for the black and spirituous spots floating just beneath her skin, so that first the juice ran out of her fist in a Rose Madder stream, and then the fruit itself broke open in a wet, dark red furrow. She plucked a dozen or so seeds out of the rich pulp and began to sow them in Norman Daniel's torn flesh. The last one she poked into his one staring eye. There was a wet popping sound as she drove it home, the sound of someone stepping on a plump grape. "What are you doing?" Rosie asked in spite of herself. She only managed to keep from adding, "Don't turn around, you can tell me without turning around." "Seeding him." Then she did something that made Rosie feel as if she had stepped into a Richard Racine novel, leaned forward and kissed the corpse's mouth. At last she drew back, took him in her arms, rose, and turned toward the white marble stairway leading into the earth. Rosie looked away, her heart thumping in her throat. "Sweet dreams, you son of a bastard," Rose Madder said, and pitched Norman's body down into the dark beneath a single chiseled word reading "maze," where perchance the seed she had planted would take root and grow. "Go back the way you came," Rose Madder said. She was standing by the stairs. Rosie stood on the far side of the clearing at the head of the path with her back turned. She didn't want even to risk looking at Rose Madder now, and she had discovered that she could not entirely trust her own eyes to do as she told them. "Go back. Find Dorcas and your man. She has something for you, and I would have more talk with you, but only a little. Then our time is finished. That will be a relief to you, I think." "He's gone, isn't he?" Rosie asked, looking steadfastly along the moonlit path. "Really gone?"
"I suppose you'll see him in your dreams," Rose Madder said dismissively. "But what of that? The simple truth of things is that bad dreams are far better than bad wakings."
"Yes, that's so simple most people overlook it, I think."
"Go now. I'll come to you. And Rosie..."
"What?"
"Remember the tree."
"The tree? I don't..."
"I know you don't, but you will. Remember the tree. Now, go."
Rosie went and didn't look back.
Thank you.
Rosie Real. Bill and the black woman, Dorcas, her name was Dorcas, not Wendy after all, were no longer on the narrow path behind the temple, and Rosie's clothes were gone too. This raised no concern in her mind. She merely trudged around the building, looked up the hill, saw them standing beside the pony trap, and started toward them. Bill came to meet her, his pale, distracted face full of concern. "Rosie, all right." "Fine," she said, and put her face against his chest. As his arms went around her, she wondered how much of the human race understood about hugging, how good it was, and how a person could want to do it for hours on end. She supposed some did understand, but doubted that they were in the majority. To fully understand about hugging, maybe you had to have missed a lot of it. They walked up to where Dorcas stood, stroking the pony's white-streaked nose. The pony raised its head and looked at Rosie sleepily. "Where's..." Rosie began, then stopped. "Caroline," she'd almost said. "Where's Caroline?" "Where's the baby?" Then boldly, "Our baby." Dorcas smiled. "Safe, in a safe place, don't you fret that, Miss Rosie. Your clothes round to the back of the cart. Go and change if you like. You'd be glad to get out of that thing you wear now, I bet." "That's a bet you'd win," Rosie said, and went around. She felt an indescribable sense of relief when the zat was off her skin. As she was zipping her jeans, she remembered something Rose Matter had told her. "Your mistress says you have something for me." "Oh," Dorcas sounded startled. "Oh, my! If I went and forgot that, she'd rip the skin right off me." Rosie picked up her blouse, and when she pulled it down over her head, Dorcas was holding something out to her. Rosie took it and held it up curiously, tilting it this way and that. It was a cunningly made little ceramic bottle, not much bigger than an eyedropper. Its mouth had been sealed with a tiny sliver of cork. Dorcas looked around, saw Bill standing some distance away, looking dreamily down the hill at the ruins of the temple, and seemed satisfied. When she turned back to Rosie, she spoke in a voice which was low but emphatic.
"One drop for him after."
Rosie nodded, as if she knew exactly what Dorcas was talking about. It was simpler that way. There were questions she could ask, perhaps, should ask, but her mind felt too tired to frame them.
"I could have given you less, only he may need another drop later on. But have a care, girl. This is dangerous stuff."
As if anything in this world is safe, Rosie thought.
"Tuck it away now,"
Dorcas said, watching as Rosie slipped the tiny bottle into the watch pocket of her jeans.
"And mind you keep quiet about it to him."
She jerked her head in Bill's direction, then looked back at Rosie, her dark face set and grim. Her eyes looked momentarily pupilless in the darkness, like the eyes of a Greek statue.
"You know why, too, don't you?"
"Yes," Rosie said. "This is woman's business."
Dorcas nodded.
"That's right, that's just what it is.
Woman's business," Rosie repeated.
And in her mind, she heard Rose Matter say,
"Remember the tree."
She closed her eyes.
The three of them sat at the top of the hill for some unknown length of time, Bill and Rosie together with their arms around each other's waist, Dorcas a little off to one side, near to where the pony still grazed sleepily. The pony looked up at the black woman every now and again, as if curious about why so many people were still up at this unaccustomed hour. But Dorcas took no notice, only sat with her arms clasped around her knees, looking wistfully up at the lightening moon. To Rosie, she looked like a woman mentally counting the choices of a lifetime and discovering that the wrong ones outnumbered the right ones, and not by only a few, either. Bill opened his mouth to speak on several occasions, and Rosie looked at him encouragingly, but each time he closed it again without saying a word. Just as the moon snagged in the trees to the left of the ruined temple, the pony raised its head again, and this time it gave voice to a low, pleased whinny. Rosie looked down the hill and saw Rose Matter coming. Strong, shapely thighs flashed in the pallid light of the fading moon. Her plaited hair swung from side to side like the pendulum in a grandfather clock. Dorcas gave a little grunt of satisfaction and got to her feet. Rosie herself felt a complex mixture of apprehension and anticipation. She put one hand on Bill's forearm and gazed at him earnestly.
"Don't look at her," she said.
"No," Dorcas agreed, "and don't ask no questions, Billy, even if she invites you to."
He looked uncertainly from Dorcas to Rosie, then back to Dorcas again.
"Why not? Who is she, anyway, the Queen of the May?" "She's queen, or whatever she wants to be queen of," Dorcas said, "and you better remember it. Don't look at her, and don't do anything to invite her temper. I can't say more than that. There's no time. Put your hands in your lap, little man, and look at them. Don't you take your eyes off them."
"But if you look at her, you'll go mad," Rosie said simply.
She looked at Dorcas, who nodded.
"It is a dream, isn't it?" Bill asked. "I mean, I'm not dead, am I? Because if this is the afterlife, I think I'd just as soon skip it."
He looked beyond the approaching woman and shivered.
"Too noisy. Too much screaming."
"It's a dream," Rosie agreed. Rose Madder was very close now, a slim, straight figure walking through jackstraws of light and shadow. The latter turned her dangerous face into the mask of a cat or perhaps a fox.
"It's a dream where you have to do exactly as we say."
"Rosie and Dorcas says, instead of Simon says." "Yep. And Dorcas says, put your hands in your lap and look at them until one of us tells you it's all right to stop."
"May I?" he asked, giving her a sly, up-from-under-the-lids glance that she thought was really a look of dazed perplexity.
"Yes," Rosie said desperately. "Yes, you may. Just for God's sake, keep your eyes off her."
He folded his fingers together and dropped his eyes obediently. Now Rosie could hear the whicker of approaching footsteps, the silky sound of grass slipping across skin. She dropped her own eyes. A moment later, she saw a pair of bare, moon-silvery legs come to a stop before her. There was a long silence, broken only by the calling of some insomniac bird in the far distance. Rosie shifted her eyes to the right and saw Bill sitting perfectly still beside her, looking at his folded hands as assiduously as a Zen student who's been placed next to the master at morning devotions. At last, shyly, without looking up, she said,
"Dorcas gave me what you wanted me to have. It's in my pocket."
"Good," that sweet, slightly husky voice answered. "That's good, Rosie Real."
A mottled hand floated into her field of vision, and something dropped into Rosie's lap. It flashed a single glint of gold in the pale late light.
"For you," Rose Madder said. "A souvenir, if you like. Do with it as you will."
Rosie plucked it out of her lap and looked at it wonderingly. The words on it, "Service, Loyalty, Community," made a triangle around the ringstone, which was a circle of obsidian. This was now marked by one bright spot of scarlet. It turned the stone into a baleful, watching eye. The silence spun out, and there was an expectant quality to it.
"Does she want to be thanked?" Rosie wondered.
She wouldn't do that, but she would tell the truth of her feelings.
"I'm glad he's dead," she said, softly and unemphatically. "It's a relief." "Of course you're glad, and of course it is. You shall go now, back to your rosy real world with this beast. He's a good one, I judge."
A hint of something, Rosie would not let herself believe it could be lust, crept into the voice of the other.
"Good hocks. Good flanks."
A pause.
"Fine loins."
Another pause, and then one of her mottled hands came down and caressed Bill's tumbled, sweaty hair. He drew in a breath at her touch but did not look up.
"A good beast. Protect him, and he'll protect you."
Rosie looked up then. She was terrified of what she might see, but nevertheless unable to stop herself.
"Don't you call him a beast again," she said in a voice that shook with fury, "and get your diseased hand off him."
She saw Dorcas wince in horror, but saw it only in the corner of her eye. The bulk of her attention was focused on Rose Madder. What had she expected from that face? Now she was looking at it in the waning moonlight. She couldn't exactly say. Medusa, perhaps. A Gorgon. The woman before her was not that. Once, and not so long ago either, Rosie thought, Her face had been one of extraordinary beauty, perhaps a face to rival Helen of Troy's. Now her features were haggard and beginning to blur. One of those dark patches had overspread her left cheek and brushed across her brow like the underwing of a starling. The hot eye glittering out of that shadow seemed both furious and melancholy. It wasn't the face Norman had seen, that much she knew. But she could see that face lurking beneath. In a way, it was as if she had put this one on for Rosie's benefit, like makeup. And it made her feel cold and ill. Underneath the beauty was madness, but not just madness. Rosie thought, it's a kind of rabies. She's being eaten up with it. All her shapes and magics and glamours trembling at the outer edge of her control now. Soon it's all going to crumble, and if I look away from her now, she's apt to fall on me and do whatever she did to Norman. She might regret it later, but that wouldn't help me, would it? Rose Madder reached down again, and this time it was Rosie's head she touched. First her brow, then her hair, which had had a long day and was now coming loose from its plait.
You're brave, Rosie. You fought well for your friend. You're courageous, and you have a good heart. But may I give you one piece of advice before I send you back?
She smiled, perhaps in an effort to be engaging, but Rosie's heart stopped momentarily before skittering madly onward. When Rose Madder's lips drew back, disclosing a hole in her face that was nothing at all like a mouth, she no longer looked even remotely human. Her mouth was the maw of a spider, something made for eating insects which weren't even dead, but only stung into insensibility.
Of course.
Rosie's lips felt numb and distant. The mottled hand stroked smoothly along her temple. The spider's mouth grinned, the eyes glittered.
Wash the dye out of your hair, Rose Madder whispered. You weren't meant to be a blonde.
Their eyes met and held. Rosie discovered she couldn't drop hers. They were locked on the other woman's face. At one corner of her vision, she saw Bill continuing to look grimly down at his hands. His cheeks and brow glimmered with sweat. It was Rose Madder who looked away.
Dorcas.
Ma'am?
The baby.
Be ready when you are.
Good, said Rose Madder. I'm eager to see her, and it's time we went along.
Time you went along too, Rosie Real, you and your man. I can call him that, you see. Your man. But before you go, Rose Madder held her arms out. Slowly, feeling almost hypnotized, Rosie got to her feet and entered the offered embrace. The dark patches growing in Rose Madder's flesh were hot and fevery. Rosie fancied she could almost feel them squirming against her own skin. Otherwise, the woman in the chiton, in the zat, was as cold as a corpse. But Rosie was no longer afraid. Rose Madder kissed her cheek high up toward the jaw and whispered,
I love you, little Rosie. I wish we'd met at a better time, when you might have seen me in a better light. But we have done as well as we could. We have been well met. Just remember the tree.
What tree? Rosie asked frantically. What tree? But Rose Madder shook her head with inarguable finality and stepped back, breaking their embrace. Rosie took one last look into that uneasy, demented face and thought again of the vixen and her kits.
Am I you? She whispered. Tell me the truth. Am I you?
Rose Madder smiled. It was just a small smile, but for a moment Rosie saw a monster glimmering in it, and she shuddered.
Never mind, little Rosie. I'm too old and sick to deal with such questions. Philosophy is the province of the well. If you remember the tree, it will never matter anyway.
I don't understand.
She put a finger to her lips. Turn around, Rosie. Turn around and see me no more. The play has ended.
Rosie turned, bent, put her hands over Bill's hands. They were still clasped, his fingers a tense woven knot between his thighs, and pulled him to his feet. Once more the easel was gone, and the picture which had been on it, her apartment at night, indifferently rendered in muddy oils, had grown to enormous size. Once more it wasn't really a picture at all, but a window. Rosie started toward it, intent on nothing but getting through it and leaving the mysteries of this world behind for good. Bill stopped her with a tug on the wrist. He turned back to Rose Matter and spoke without allowing his eyes to rise any higher than her breasts. "Thank you for helping us," he said.
"You're very welcome," Rose Matter said composedly. "Repay me by treating her well."
"I repay," Rosie thought, and shuddered again. "Come on," she said, tugging Bill's hand. "Please, let's go." He lingered a moment longer, though. "Yes," he said, "I'll treat her well. I've got a pretty good idea of what happens to people who don't. Better than I want, maybe."
"It's such a pretty man," Rose Matter said thoughtfully,
and then her tone changed. It became distraught, almost distracted. "Take him while you can, Rosie Real. While you still can." "Go on," Dorcas cried. "You two get out of here right now."
"But give me what's mine before you go,"
Rose Matter screamed. Her voice was squealing and unearthly.
"Give it to me, you bitch!"
Something, not an arm, something too thin and bristly to be an arm, flailed in the moonlight and slid along the madly shrinking flesh of Rosie McClendon's forearm. With a scream of her own, Rosie pulled the gold armlet off and flung it at the feet of the looming, writhing shape before her. She was aware of Dorcas throwing her arms around that shape, trying to restrain it, and Rosie waited to see no more. She seized Bill by the arm and yanked him through the window-sized painting. There was no sensation of tripping, but she fell rather than walked out of the painting just the same. So did Bill. They landed on the closet floor side by side in a long, trapezoidal patch of moonlight. Bill rapped his head against the side of the door, hard enough to hurt by the sound, but he seemed unaware of it.
"That was no dream," he said. "Jesus, we were in the picture.
The one you bought on the day I met you."
"No," she said calmly, "not at all."
Around them, the moonlight began to simultaneously brighten and contract. At the same time, it lost its linear shape and quickly became circular. It was as if a door were slowly irising closed behind them. Rosie felt an urge to turn and see what was happening, but she resisted it. And when Bill started to turn his head, she placed her palms gently against his cheeks and turned his face back to hers.
"Don't," she said. "What good would it do? Whatever happened is over now."
But the light had contracted to a blindingly bright spotlight around them now, and Rosie had the crazy idea that if Bill took her in his arms and danced her across the room, that bright beam of light would follow them.
"Never mind," she said. "Never mind any of it. Just let it go."
"But where is Norman, Rosie?"
"Gone," she said.
And then, as an almost comic afterthought, "My sweater and the jacket you loaned me, too. The sweater wasn't much, but I'm sorry about the jacket." "Hey," he said with a kind of numb insouciance, "don't sweat the small stuff." The pin spot shrank to a cold and furiously blazing match head of light, then to a needle point, and then it was gone, leaving just a white dot of after image floating in front of her eyes. She looked back into the closet. The picture was exactly where she had put it following her first trip to the world inside it, only it had changed again. Now it showed only the hilltop and the temple below, by the last rays of the waning moon. The stillness of this scene, and the absence of any human figure, made it look more classical than ever to Rosie.
"Christ," Bill said. He was rubbing his swollen throat. "What happened, Rosie? I just can't figure out what happened."
Not too much time could have passed. Down the hall, the tenant Norman had shot was still screaming his head off.
"I ought to go see if I can help that guy," Bill said, struggling to his feet. "Will you call an ambulance and the cops?"
"Yes, I imagine they're both on their way already, but I'll make the calls."
He went to the door, then looked back doubtfully, still massaging his throat.
What'll you tell the police, Rosie?
She hesitated a moment, then smiled.
Dunno, but I'll think of something.
These days, invention on short notice is my strong suit. Go on now. Do your thing. I love you, Rosie. That's the only thing I'm sure of anymore. He went before she could reply. She followed a step or two after him, then stopped. From down the hall, she could now see a hesitant bobbing light that had to be a candle. Someone said, "Holy cow, is he shot?" Bill's murmured reply was lost in another howl from the injured man. Injured, yes, but probably not too badly. Not if he could produce a noise level that high. Unkind, she told herself, picking up the handset of her new telephone and punching 911. Perhaps it was. But it might also be simple realism. Rosie didn't think it mattered either way. She'd started to see the world in a new perspective, she supposed, and her thought about the yelling man down the hall was just one sign of that new perspective at work. "It doesn't matter as long as I remember the tree," she said, without even being aware that she had spoken. The phone on the other end of her call was picked up after a single ring. "Hello, 911. This call is being recorded."
"Yes, I'm sure."
"My name is Rosie McClendon, and my residence is 897 Trenton Street, second floor. My upstairs neighbor needs an ambulance." "Ma'am, can you tell me the nature of his..." She could. She most certainly could. But something else struck her then, something she hadn't understood before but did now, something that needed doing right this second. She dropped the phone back into its cradle and slipped the first two fingers of her right hand into the watch pocket of her jeans. That little pocket was sometimes convenient, but it was irritating, too. Just one more visible sign of the world's half-conscious prejudice against southpaws like her. It was a world made by and for right-handers, as a general rule, and full of similar little inconveniences. But that was all right. If you were a lefty, you just learned to cope, that was all. And it could be done, Rosie thought. As that old Bob Dylan song about Highway 61 said, oh yes, it could be very easily done. She tweezed out the tiny ceramic bottle Dorcas had given her, looked at it fixedly for 2 or 3 seconds, then cocked her head to listen out the door. Someone else had joined the group at the end of the hall, and the man who had been shot, at least Rosie assumed it was speaking to them in a gaspy, weepy little voice. And in the distance, Rosie could hear sirens coming this way. She went into the kitchenette area and opened her tiny refrigerator. Inside was a package of bologna with 3 or 4 slices left, a quart of milk, 2 cartons of plain yogurt, a pint of juice, and 3 bottles of Pepsi. She took one of these latter, twisted off the cap, and stood it on the counter. She snatched another quick look over her shoulder, half expecting to see Bill in the doorway. "What are you doing?" he would ask. "What are you mixing up there?" The doorway was empty, however, and she could hear him at the end of the hallway, speaking in the calm, considering voice she had already come to love. Using her nails, she pulled the sliver of cork from the mouth of the tiny bottle. Then she held it up, wafting it back and forth under her nostrils like a woman smelling a bottle of perfume. What she smelled was not perfume, but she knew the scent, bitter, metallic, but oddly attractive just the same, at once. The little bottle contained water from the stream which ran behind the temple of the bull. "Dorcas, 1 drop for him, after." Yes, only one. More would be dangerous, but 1 might be enough. All the questions and all the memories, the moonlight, Norman's terrible shrieks of pain and horror, the woman he had been forbidden to look at, would be gone. So would her fear that those memories might eat away at his sanity and their budding relationship, like corroding acid. That might turn out to be a specious worry. The human mind was tougher and more adaptable than most people would ever believe. If 14 years with Norman had taught her nothing else, it had taught her that. But was it a chance she wanted to take? Was it when things might just as easily go the other way? Which was more dangerous? His memories or this liquid amnesia? "Have a care, girl. This is dangerous stuff." Rosie's eyes drifted from the tiny ceramic bottle to the sink drain and then slowly back to the bottle again. Rose Matter,
A good beast. Protect him, and he'll protect you.
Rosie decided that the terminology of that last might be contemptuous and wrong, but the idea was right. Slowly, carefully, she tilted the ceramic bottle over the neck of the Pepsi-Cola bottle and let a single drop fall from the one to the other. Plink.
Now dump the rest down the sink, quick.
She started to, then remembered the rest of what Dorcas had said.
I could have given you less, only he may need another drop later on.
Yes, and what about me? She asked herself, driving the minuscule cork back into the neck of the bottle and returning it to that inconvenient watch pocket.
What about me? Will I need a drop or two later on to keep me from going nuts?
She didn't think she would. And besides,
those who don't learn from the past are condemned to repeat the bastard, she muttered.
She didn't know who had said that, but she knew it was too plausible to ignore. She hurried back to the phone, holding the doctored Pepsi in one hand. She punched 911 again and got the same operator with the same opening gambit.
Watch yourself, lady. This call is being recorded.
It's Rosie McClendon again, she said. We got cut off. She took a calculated pause, then laughed nervously. Oh, hell, that's not exactly true. I got excited and pulled the phone jack out of the wall. Things are a little crazy here right now. Yes, ma'am. An ambulance has been dispatched to 897 Trenton as per request, Rose McClendon. We have a report from the same address of shots fired, ma'am. Is your report a gunshot wound?
Yes, I think so.
Do you want me to connect you with a police officer?
I want to speak to Lieutenant Hale. He's a detective, so I guess I want detdiv or whatever you call it here.
There was a pause, and when the 911 operator spoke again, he sounded a little less like a machine. Yes, ma'am. Detective Division is what we call it. Detdiv. I'll put you through.
Thanks. Do you want my phone number, or do you trap calls?
Definite surprise this time. I've got your number, ma'am.
I thought you did.
Hold on, I'm transferring you.
As she waited, she picked up the bottle of Pepsi and wafted it under her nose, as she had the other, much tinier bottle. She thought she could smell just the slightest tang of bitterness, but perhaps that was only her imagination, not that it mattered. Either he'd drink it or he wouldn't. Ka, she thought, and then, what?
Before she could go any further with that, the phone was picked up. Detective Division, Sergeant Williams. She gave him Hale's name and was put on hold. Outside her room and down the hallway, the murmuring and the groaning replies continued. The sirens were much closer now.